Hey, what's going on? It's Greg Rosenthal. Before we get to the big podcast today, I'm going to tell you a little bit about FanDuel.
FanDuel.
You know, your playoffs in fantasy winding down. I'm in the semifinals this week. But if you're out of luck, you can sign up for a one-week league at FanDuel.com. Matt Nichols, Matty Boy from Ohio, turned a $25 deposit into over $25,000 playing fantasy football on FanDuel. It's one-week fantasy leagues. The money is real. They send you cash money after you win. Go to FanDuel.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our code AROUND and sign up. New user special gives you a bonus of up to $200 on your first deposit. For every dollar you deposit, they'll match up to $200. If you put that code in, AROUND, you're going to get some cash. Again, that code is AROUND, and if you help out FanDuel, you're helping out the Around the League podcast. Now let's get to the show.
The Around the NFL podcast simply enjoys the buffet.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What's happening?
Thursday show.
I'm loving this. Week 15. This is sometimes people kind of, you know, you're losing a little energy here. It's late in the season, the holidays. But, like, you know, this is the biggest game the Browns have had in 8 years. It's the biggest game the Bills have had. These are all the games that matter for the
Jets,
season this
Titans,
week.
Jets, Titans, Sunday.
Okay.
That's all the
biggest
marbles.
Game the Bills have had since, what, 2004? You know, like, these are the games we've been building towards since all those crappy April podcasts.
But they were not crappy, sir. We won a Stitcher. Because of those crappy April podcasts. Mark, are you willing to say we've passed the halfway point of the season now?
I think we're about there.
Yeah.
There's still like 10 more weeks of action. If you can factor in
Coaching searches,
the head into the combine. We're never at halfway point.
Black Monday, 2 weeks from Monday. It seems so.
How is that possible? The season just started.
Whew. What's Black Monday?
When the
we're not supposed to
use those words, but when the
hey, noob.
When the coaches, you know, change jobs and whatnot.
Oh, that's a nice way of saying.
I thought it had something to do with Christmas.
When the coaches get S-canned right after the season ends, that is Black Monday because in their lives, and remember these are people too, it's a dark day. Black is dark.
Got to sell the house.
Got to
get your children into new schools. A lot going on there.
Exactly. So, big show today, big Thursday show. We have as we always do, we're going to go through every Sunday game and the Monday night game, preview, and go through all those games, share some hot takes, hashtag, and also a little dash of mirth, which is always good. People like that. But really good analysis from a bunch of football heads in the room. I just love being in the presence of greatness with all these football heads.
That was so sarcastic.
So anyway, and of course, before we get to any of that, we are going to, as promised, we're going to bring back our Stick a Fork in 'Em series. It's time. We escaped to the conference room. Danish coffee. Mark, you had tea, which I like.
No, it's I had coffee. And you don't drink coffee.
That's right. I had the tea, and three teams came out of it.
Their season's damned. Over.
They're damned.
They're done.
They're considering not playing this week.
Yeah, so we're going to get to that. But first, we have to check in on our Thursday night football. What team do we have working the game tonight? Is it the A team or the B team?
A-plus team.
A-plus team.
No, this is the B team. This is the Greg and Wes combination.
Greg
That's
and Wes
the B
combo.
Team.
B team. Take it away, guys. Tell us about the Arizona Cardinals-St. Louis Rams showdown.
Thank you, Dan. This is the A team, and congrats, Dan, starting off the week with a hero pick. He got the Arizona Cardinals going to St. Louis and getting a win and almost clinching a playoff spot. They get it 12-6 in a crazy game where they lose their quarterback again. Ryan Lindley comes in, but it doesn't matter. The Cardinals are too tough. Chris Wessling, you loved everything about this game.
That's not true. This was a boring game, but it had a fairly exciting finish and a great quote from Bruce Arians afterwards, basically chastising you, me, and Mark for not picking a team that is 11-3 versus, as Arian says, a team that finishes 7-9 or 8-8 every year.
Well, he says 8-8. He said he was getting emotional. Like, he was almost crying because this game virtually clinches the playoff spot. They're in the playoffs with 11 wins unless the Eagles and Cowboys tie on Sunday. and he was mad that everyone was picking against him, that they were underdogs. And he said, there's an 11-3 team, and then there's a team that's always 8-8. You figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he's the best. And maybe he knows in his heart, he doesn't know what's next for this team, that maybe they've accomplished what they can accomplish, because Drew Stanton went down with a knee injury. We don't know the severity of it now. Ryan Lindley came in. They already had a 6-point lead. They did move the ball a little bit with Lindley, enough to get the win, but it's hard to imagine this team winning games from here on out with him at quarterback.
Yeah, Lindley's not the answer. They might have to actually go to Logan Thomas.
I mean, figure they will.
Yeah, he said he went with the experience in this game, but it's telling that with his fourth quarterback of the year in the game, Arians is still dialing up downfield passes while Jeff Fisher is passing up fourth and short on multiple occasions. Mm. And the more aggressive coach won. It's no surprise.
Right. Fisher had a 4th-and-1 in the red zone in the first quarter. He took the field goal. He had a 4th-and-inches on the goal line. He had 3rd-and-inches on the goal line. And he calls a pass, and then he calls a field goal, and they end up losing by 6 points. So they deserve to lose. There was nothing about this game that they were better than the Cardinals at. It was not a good-looking game. But who was the best running back in this game?
Kerwin Williams.
Kerwin Williams. Who had the best pass rush by far in this game?
Well, the Rams almost had a Golston. They have one quarterback hit right on Stanton and Lindley.
So you're telling me you go into St. Louis, you run the ball better than them with Kerwin Williams, and you have a much better and more dynamic pass defense, and that's what these two teams are kind of about right now, is defense. They deserve it.
And if the Cardinals want to, you know, with all the quarterback problems, they can hang their hat on the rushing game, which Kerwin Williams averaging 5.2 yards per carry the last two games. Andre Ellington was averaging 1.9 over the previous month.
And Stephon Taylor has a change of pace, making a couple people miss. He's looked good. Obviously, this is a team that's going to have to figure out if Stanton can get back to see what kind of hope they have. It's hard to imagine them competing against the Seahawks next week if he's not at quarterback. It was a tall order as it was, but at 11 wins now, you know, you got a few weeks maybe to figure it out, and who knows, you might be a road team going to the winner of the NFC South. That's not the worst thing in the world.
That's a good point. That might be best case scenario for them.
Right, get a win in the playoffs, and the Rams, who we've talked up as the best team under 500 all year, really had a poor performance. The offense couldn't do anything at all. 5 straight 3-and-outs to start the second half. The defense was good, but it wasn't as dynamic as you would hope. So even though they've been better this year, they still do the same thing the Cardinals and the Seahawks do, but they don't do it as well.
8 straight punts in the second and third quarters. I mean, that's terrible. You can't win like that.
Yeah, Arians was nice. This team's not even going to go 8-8 probably right now.
Yeah, he was nice. They usually go 7-9.
They're going to go 7-9 and talk about some other teams that are a little more exciting. Let's send it back to the rest of the guys.
All right. Excellent job there, B-team. Moving up the old alphabet chart. All right. So, it's time. And, you know, again, like we were saying with Black Monday earlier, we don't dwell on this like it's a good thing that we're talking doom about people. These are fan bases that really wanted their team to do well. Mm. And some of the teams we might about to bring up, because as we've said, we've decided to be a little more daring this year. Their seasons aren't necessarily over, but we have decided that the season is over. This is
Stick a Fork in 'em.
Ooh. The Stick a Fork in 'em series. Here lies the San Francisco 49ers, who passed away this season when their Super Bowl window unexpectedly closed on them. In lieu of flowers, please offer a silent prayer for Colin Kaepernick's potential. Who's got it better than us? Many.
Well done.
Yeah. Well, you know what? 7-6, trip to Seattle. We'll be talking about that shortly. Not a great spot for them, so there's a very good chance they're going to be 7-7 in the next 72 hours, and there's no coming back from that in the NFC.
Seahawks are going to end their season and the Harbaugh era in one game.
It wouldn't be shocking if they didn't win a game the rest of the year and ended the season on a 5-game losing streak when you look at their schedule.
The wheels could fly off here.
They've got some tough games coming up. It's funny to think back to kind of what we thought about this team in the offseason, that the offense was going to have to be better this year to make up for the defense because they were without Navarro Bowman, a lot of injured players. And instead, the offense got way worse than it's been. Even when Alex Smith was there, it wasn't this bad.
You got Frank Gore complaining about Greg Roman. Vernon Davis today or yesterday complaining about Greg Roman. I think it wouldn't be a shock to see them lose out. And it would be the second year in a row that Seattle's ended their season. And really, Pete Carroll has won this chapter of the Harbaugh-Pete Carroll feud. They've won four of the last five, including the playoffs, since Kaepernick's been the starter. They've kind of owned them.
So what do they have to do?
Get a new coach, maybe rethink everything.
I don't think they have to do that much. It's a nice roster, relatively. I think their coach could be on the staff as it is. Jim Tomsula, we hear they love this guy, could rise up, and it's a pretty good roster overall.
It'd be interesting to see if Tomsula takes over, will Greg Roman stay? Because they need someone who can turn Colin Kaepernick's career around.
Here lies the Buffalo Bills, who escaped Canada, Bon Jovi, and a blizzard, but could not evade the fork. We ask you to try to remember the good times, like when they convinced Kyle Orton to come out of retirement. In lieu of flowers, please donate your time and effort to the search party for E.J. Manuel.
Too bad we're putting a fork in them, because they're still here in the mix, 7-6, but you look at their schedule, they got the Packers this week, they're playing the Patriots. They're done. They were a nice team, though. It was fun to watch a Buffalo Bills team that was enjoyable to watch.
If they could win one more game, and again, that's a modest pleasure for a Bills fan if they go 8-8. But if they can do that, this is a building block season, and they just got to then figure out the quarterback position, because I would assume, and we talked about it earlier this week, that the fact that E.J. Manuel has stayed buried, even as Orton has come back to earth a little bit, kind of tells you that this organization is really down, if not out, on Manuel. So do you get out and just start over at that position?
Yes.
I think good organizations are willing to cut ties with 2 years into a faulty quarterback.
Orton's due $5.4 million next year. It's a voidable year. I made a list on the site today of the teams that need a quarterback the most.
And nice plug.
The Bills could be really at the very top because they've clearly given up on E.J. Manuel. You know, Orton's fine to have around next year if you want, you know, as a backup option. But I think it's really frustrating for them because this is a team, I think, that has a roster that could have gone deep in the playoffs if they had a quarterback.
Well, we talked about them that way in the spring. We asked, are they a playoff team? And we, you know, I mean, it's obvious, just they were a quarterback away. I think the one thing, Bills fans, yeah, you're getting forked right here. And so there's really no reason to even turn on the television the rest of the way. But you go 8-8 without a quarterback. Doug Marrone saved his job.
Here's the problem, though, is a lot of times these seasons get built up as building block seasons. And it's like you may never have this defensive line together, healthy, at the right point in their careers to, you know, playing well again. You just never know from year to year. It almost feels more like a missed opportunity for this team.
I don't know. Let's look on the bright side instead. They've got Nigel Bradham and Preston Brown playing awesome at linebacker. They get the legend of Kiko Alonso back next year.
That's good.
They've got a good building block on defense, and I think some of the most impressive performances by a defense all year have been by the Buffalo Bills, just flying to the ball.
And it also tells us that, you know, they're not hitting on every pick, but they're drafting well.
Yes.
Finally. Here lies the Miami Dolphins, who proved once again that the porpoise, well, the beautiful and intelligent creature, cannot survive in the waters come December. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the Joe Feldman Charisma Fund. Because everyone deserves some charisma. If you listen closely, you could hear Ryan Tannehill sailing a deep ball over Mike Wallace's head right now.
This is the one that we had a little discussion about because, listen, they waxed New England in week one, and Greg's been saying all along that the Miami Dolphins have every bit enough talent to win the East. Well, that's not happening, but if they ever beat the Patriots, they'd be 8-6 with games against the Vikings and Jets.
Coming up in Miami,
but too. None of us believe in them.
No,
last week's loss to the Ravens killed them. That was a huge loss.
I really love Dan's readings, by the way. I'd like to have a podcast of just all of his readings, like collected. Maybe we could sell that as a holiday album or something.
My
other favorite thing about this is Dan has his computer on the Wikipedia entry of porpoises.
I wanted to make sure a dolphin is a porpoise, and I don't think it is, but they're the same family.
Right.
So, you know,
it was understood.
Close enough. Thank you.
Yeah, we killed the joke.
That's
right
a great
there.
Idea, Greg, to have the eulogy at the holiday time.
Dark dude. Greg loves Black Monday, by the way.
That's not true at all.
Well, that's what you tell us behind the scenes.
Anyway, so because I missed a lot of Mark's point there because I was trying to figure out the porpoise situation. Is Joe Philbin back? Is Ryan Tannehill still the guy? What is the future of the Dolphins, assuming things don't work out?
I don't think
there's
any question that Tannehill's still the guy. Philbin's a good question.
This is really hard for Stephen Ross because he wanted a playoff season, and they can make the case that they've slightly progressed each year. I think this was the best Joe Philbin team. I think they'll get to 9 wins, and it's not a terrible team, but I just don't believe in him as a coach, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they replaced him.
It doesn't seem like at least a number of his players believe in him either.
Exactly.
I mean, I understand that they know in the heat of the moment. Well, you know how many teams have a big defensive lineman shouting at their coach in the heat, you know, the late in a game?
Here's the issue, though. If they get rid of Philbin, it's like then you get rid of Lazor, and then you're starting off with a new offense again for Ryan Tannehill, and you believe he's the guy. And the defense isn't that bad. So it's not as easy as just saying we don't like Philbin's personality. Maybe you can just bump Lazor up to the top spot.
That's what Handsome Hank predicted months and months ago.
It's true, in August.
So that's 16 fork teams this year. I think that'll be it. Because at a certain point, you can't really keep forking teams this late in the season. So that's 16 down. There were 3 that were under some level, even brief conversation downstairs or in the Danish room. Browns, Chargers, and Chiefs all survived the fork, but our eyes will be tightly trained on them on Sunday.
Well, the Browns are the team here that I would vote to fork.
I would, too.
Because they're playing the Bengals this week. I picked them to lose this game. None of you guys did. We'll get to that later. But right there, I see their 7th loss.
Spoiler alert.
And I think that they're just kind of a mediocre. I thought they've been a fun team to watch, but I just don't think they're a 10 or 11 win team ready to win 3 straight games.
Well, I could hear why you'd fork them, especially if Hoyer were still in there at quarterback, but it's an unknown. This is a team switching that position to what many think is one of the more electric young stars in the game potentially. So why I want to wait at least a week.
I guess you're right, and that maybe he will be awesome, but let's put the best 3 quarterbacked games by rookies all season up back to back to back. That's basically what he's going to need to win 3 straight. I mean, rookie quarterbacks don't normally come in and just light the world
up. Well, that is very pragmatic and highly depressing.
The Browns carried Brian Hoyer a few times this season. They don't need Manziel play out of his mind.
That's true. If they play defense like they did last week again, then they get a shot.
All right, man, it is time, my Around the NFL compadres, to look through the games that really jump out to us this week, week 15, and we'll start with a rematch of the NFC Championship game of a year ago almost now, the San Francisco 49ers heading to Seattle to face the Seahawks. And, guys, we know what's on the line for Seattle. They need to catch Arizona in the West if they want that division and home field. They're 1 game back here with 3 to play. But for the Niners, it's really live and die type situation here. They're 7-6. They lose this game, you can forget about it. It's time, the whole thing can come falling apart if they go to 7-7, the way things seem so, tense in that building right now. How do we see this? So the Niners summon some greatness from their past?
I look at the schedule makers, and they did this with Dallas and Philly, too. It was, you just played. I was just at Dan's house on Thanksgiving night.
Mm.
Dan's wife carving up some turkey, making
some food. I carved
the
turkey.
Dan carved the turkey. Wife made some other food. And bang.
Disgraceful.
Seattle waxed San Francisco.
If that turkey was alive, that turkey would be so high right now.
All right, that's fine. I don't see that much that's changed with these teams. If anything, Seattle's defense has proven it's gotten only stronger.
Well, think how much changes in a couple weeks. Two weeks ago, this game was in San Francisco, and there was kind of debate among us. This was a game that was tough to pick. Which team is going to take off? Dan, I remember you took the 49ers. I had taken the 49ers, and I switched it. It was a team that two teams we thought were reasonably equal, and
Greg
now they
shoehorns
just see.
That in.
Just I'm just saying they
ruined my Thanksgiving night.
Did it? Well, I like you're taking it so seriously. Now they just seem worlds apart, though. I mean, this seems like one of the worst offenses in football.
I look back to last year's NFC Championship game. The Seahawks are the exact same team. They have the same defense. They have a 3-game stretch they're coming off that's stronger than anything they did last year. Marshawn Lynch is playing great. And the 49ers, I mean, look at that play that Kaepernick made last year, and everyone was just astonished by it, and he's not that guy anymore.
And we've talked about it. Like, the 49ers, they're not scoring points. They're not running the ball particularly well. They're not able to impose their will the way that they have under Jim Harbaugh. They're boring.
They're boring, yes, and they've been playing poorly this season in a lot of stretches, including right now. But do you guys put any stock into the idea of, like, the wounded war horse in a desperate spot, like, making something happen, even though they're not as talented
Harbaugh.
As they are? You know, Harbaugh, you know, pushing the right buttons this week, and they come back with a great effort. I could see this game being close.
No, not in Seattle.
I just think Seattle's defense is playing at too high of a level for that to happen.
It really is the Jim Harbaugh era's last stand. I mean, we've already forked them. We're digging dirt on them. We don't think they have any chance. But they do have a chance. They are 7-6. This is basically it for a team that was close to winning the Super Bowl, a play or two away, a play away from making the Super Bowl last year, and then this is it for this Jim Harbaugh run.
I guess I'm the only – I think this is a field goal game. I think we're going to see them put up a really good effort, and I don't think they're going to win. But I would be surprised if they just get their doors blown off. I know they're an inferior team, but I would be surprised if the team went out that easy.
When we talked about the demise of the running quarterback, and Russell Wilson's the exception. The most amazing stat I've heard all week is that he has played 50 games, playoffs included, and the Seahawks have led in every single one of them.
That's unbelievable.
That has a lot to do with their defense, though, too.
Right, exactly. That's why he's thriving. I think you put Kaepernick on the Seahawks, they would be doing pretty well as well. The reason I don't really buy that 49ers argument is even in the best of times, they got blasted in Seattle. I mean, when they were a great team, they weren't competitive the last couple of years. They've just gotten crushed.
Kaepernick's beat him once. So, sorry, Dan. I mean, we're ruling against you here.
But
I mean,
please, switch your pick to the 49ers.
Like I
Do
said,
it.
I'm not picking the 49ers, but I think this has been a great team for a long period of time.
Right.
And I think this is the end of the road, and I think they're going to go out fighting, but I don't think it'll be enough. We're all on the same page on this. I just don't think it'll be embarrassing for them. Whatever, guys. Moving on to our next game. The Dallas Cowboys. Yes, speaking of Thanksgiving, a rematch. The Dallas Cowboys against the Philadelphia Eagles. And this is a game in which the Cowboys are trying to bounce back from, really got embarrassed in their building by the Eagles. The Eagles moved into first place. Now the Cowboys have tied the Eagles again. They picked up a game last week. And this is a game in which three of us in this group believe that the Eagles will again beat the Cowboys. But one of us disagree. And when that happens on the Around the NFL podcast, we call it a hero pick. And in this case, it is the great... Who was it? Greg Rosenthal?
No,
Mark
come on.
Mark Sessler.
The ultimate hero.
The great hero, Mark
the
Sessler.
Quiet storm.
The quiet storm.
I'm surprised
storm.
I got a hero pick on this.
Mark Sessler, defend your hero.
I will defend it. I think that, you know, when you look at these division matchups, I think people want to bury the Cowboys. Not Dan. Dan's been a Cowboys guy all year, but they want to say this is the end for Dallas.
You always use the word people when you want to take shots at me.
No, across the board, right. I think people look at Dallas as they're the team that's not going to make the playoffs. I like what they did. They went against Chicago. I thought they got back on their game plan. They showed basically the strengths from the earlier part of this year, translated.
Is DeMarco Murray out of bed yet? I feel like after getting 75,000 touches at Soldier Field, that seems strange.
I thought he looked fresh. I mean, I think he'll be fine. I think that they, you know, their bye week came at the perfect time. This one thing, these NFC East divisional games, I just went with the split. Philly went into Dallas and stole one. I just say Dallas doing the same thing.
But they didn't steal one. That's why I didn't pick the Cowboys.
They dropped a bomb on them.
I would say, though, Mark Sanchez did not look good last week. No. I could see him potentially laying another egg.
Well, that was against Seattle, trouble. And that's almost what I would call an aberration. So I think this is going to be a game where Philly will bounce back on offense. I'm not looking at them to reproduce what happened against the Seahawks. Dallas showed that they had trouble with Philadelphia. I think it's going to be a real tight, high-scoring game.
I picked the Eagles because I think they're clearly the better team. Their defense is playing at a really high level over the past month. They even in the Seahawks game, Russell Wilson pulled some plays out of you-know-where.
Out of the playbook?
What's your reference?
Tookus.
Oh.
Wow.
Heine
reference. Watch it there. Kids, okay. Kids could be watching.
The butt.
But that's outside of structure. Fletcher Cox is playing like a top three or four defensive player right now. Connor
in the
Barwin's
NFL, been, Fletcher Cox,
yes.
Top three or four?
Fletcher Cox is playing like a top three or four defensive player in the NFL. He is dominant, and I think that's been the difference. This is a really good defense now, and they weren't earlier in the year.
If you're going to make a case for the Cowboys, you know, they really made a big deal about they had the short week last time and Romo had the injury and he couldn't get his normal practice routine in. And he couldn't take the pain-killing injection. And now he's had a nice long rest until this game. And he did move around pretty well in that Chicago game. But he still isn't the same guy that's going to push the ball down the field. And I think you have a team that's going to make big plays in Philly and a team that has to go 12 plays to score every touchdown in Dallas. And that's why the Eagles win.
Greg, a couple days ago on the show, was bemoaning the fact that he picked Philly over Seattle, realizing after the fact that it was a big mistake.
Well, sure.
Same thing's going to happen again. To all three of you.
And you gentlemen know that I love, even though I get shots about it, I love the national pastime, baseball. And one of the reasons I love it is stats and milestone numbers. And football, there doesn't have the same type of ring with that type of stuff. But 2,000 yards as a running back does have that glow, and it's a special number. DeMarco Murray, 394 yards away. He needs to average 131 over the next 3 weeks. That's not impossible.
No, he could,
be a 2,000-yard running back.
How do you feel about the fact that if your team isn't the Yankees, you just have to tear it down every few years as soon as you get good players because they get too expensive? Great sport, Dan.
I'm not interested in this debate right now.
No, oh, okay.
I have 26 rings to fall back on, good sir. And Paulie O'Neill. We stole Paulie from you. The Reds, they had him, and they gave him to us for Bobby Kelly.
Yeah, that
it's
was not
thoughtful of them
trade.
To send those rings to the hands of
Grab hands. The reins.
Anyway, moving on. Paulie O'Neill was a great Yankee. The Denver Broncos head to San Diego to face the Chargers. The Denver Broncos, of course, they leaned hard on their running game of late, and we've talked a little bit about Peyton Manning falling off statistically of late and whether that is something to be curious about as we head toward the playoffs. They face a Chargers team that really needs a win here. Well, they're 8-5. Not bad position, but they can't really afford to stumble here. Another game where the three of us picked one team, the Denver Broncos, and one other person pick the Chargers.
Who is that person?
The man speaking right now. Daniel Hanses.
Defend your hero.
I picked the Chargers because, first of all, I am loyal to the team around the NFL, as Wes, you know.
To a fault.
Perhaps to a fault, but you know what? When I make a decision, I stand by it. I'm going to ride this to the end, and I think this is a spot where the Chargers are going to take care of business against a Broncos team that, I'm sorry, they're due for a loss. I don't think they're going to get the one seed. I think they're the two seed. 12-4 sounds right. They're 10-3 right now. They could lose a game and still be fine and get that two seed. The Patriots are going to get the one seed. I know that. So I think the Chargers need the game more. I love Phillip Rivers in this spot and at home. Hopefully they'll fill that building up with Chargers fans this time around, not like they did against Sunday against the Patriots. So I like it. I feel good about this hero pick, and I am rolling forward with a team of around the NFL.
We gave the Patriots a lot of credit for winning in San Diego a different sort of way, like on a day that Tom Brady didn't play that well in his defense. But like, let's give the Broncos credit for doing that. This is a team that in the past would not have been able to win the game on defense and with the running game like C.J. Anderson. And that's, I mean, they put a stranglehold on a pretty good Bills team on a day where Peyton Manning got very little done through the air. It was a relatively routine game, even if it looked close at the end. And that's impressive to me that they can win even when Manning's not playing that well.
I would never look at John Fox as a young Bill Belichick, or he's older than whatever. They're both old guys, but like him in the making, a mentorship where, oh, you know, my quarterback's not playing at a high level the way he has maybe in previous weeks, so I'll change the offense and do what we do a different way. The Broncos haven't had to do that. And I'm impressed with the fact that they essentially took what was a pretty moribund ground game and are able to amp it up behind a line that's had some ups and downs.
Moribund.
Too.
I think
more of that.
I think the Broncos are telling us something about Peyton Manning's arm right now.
But you, I thought you.
Which is what? Shouldn't it be okay in San Diego? It'll be nice and warm at least.
It will be warm.
I think there's more to it than that. Remember 2 years ago when all the hubbub over Eli having a tired arm? I think he's not the only Manning with a tired arm. Mm. I think Peyton Manning's got something going on there.
Well, and he keeps trying to force the ball down the field because I think defenses are allowing that. I mean, you saw it last week where he pushed about three balls down the field. One of them he hit, one of them picked off. A couple of them looked pretty ugly. But to me, it's because they're almost daring Manning to go deep. And for now, he's still been going for it, and it hasn't really worked very well.
One thing in Dan's favor, I mean, Mike McCoy, who spent obviously a lot of time with Manning, he's always played him well in San Diego. I thought, you know, outside of one or two affairs, they found a way to get under Denver's skin.
I think when you have Peyton Manning as your quarterback, you go run heavy out of necessity. It's not because you want to. You put the game in Peyton Manning's hands.
One reason I like the Chargers a little bit in this game is they are a different defense with Melvin Ingram there, and they're a different offense with Ryan Matthews there, and it helped that Manti Te'o's back. I do think their defense especially is different than they were 5 or 6 weeks ago when they were in that lull.
All right, this is a free Pepsi Cola product. from the break room to anyone that could get closest to John Fox's age without going over. We'll start with the Sessler.
67.
What?
I don't know. I can't tell anyone's age above my own.
That's old.
That's not even close.
I'll go 57.
All right.
Yeah, that was right around where I was going. I'm going to go 55 then.
Chris Wessling, he is 59 years old. Mm-hmm. Wes, you have a Diet Pepsi coming your way.
I don't drink Diet.
You have a Mountain Dew coming your way.
I might need one of those later.
Bob.
This isn't even one of our sponsors. We're just
Pepsi Cola. Great product. Is that their catchphrase?
I'm not sure that we, I don't know.
All right, moving on to Cleveland, where the Cincinnati Bengals will play the Browns. The Bengals, of course, coming off that tough loss. Really took it on the chin against the Steelers, tightened up that division. They're up a half game on the Steelers and Ravens. The Browns at 7-6. This is must-win territory for this team. And, of course, they have Johnny Manziel at quarterback. And one of the biggest surprises of the picks, I thought, this week for the Around the NFL group was that we all picked the Browns to knock off the Bengals, except for one of us. And he's sitting to my right, and he's got a lot of charm. He's
wow.
Greg Rosenthal.
Charm.
Greg,
that's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah,
me.
I don't know where that came from. Greg, defend your hero.
I think the Bengals are a slightly better team. I thought, much like Mark did in the NFC East game, that it just seems like these two teams should split their season series. I think the Browns have something great going on that doesn't quite add up to a very good team, that they've overachieved. A few weeks ago, I pegged them at 8-8. This feels like a game they're going to lose, and I don't really have much faith in Johnny Manziel being a difference maker. I don't see why he's going to be better than most of the rookie quarterback performances we've seen. It's really hard to just step right in there. You're facing a tough veteran defense, and I think they lose a tight one.
We've said this before. The Bengals' offense goes as A.J. Green goes, and the best defensive player on the Browns for the past 6-7 weeks, Joe Hayden is playing at an extremely high level.
That's true.
His last three games against A.J. Green, 51 yards, 7 yards, and 23 yards.
You just scared Greg.
I wish I knew that before I picked the Bengals.
It's too late, buddy boy.
No, I'm sticking with it.
Mark, you're confident. We talked about this on Wednesday. You think there's going to be a mollywhopping by the Browns?
Well,
in this
we
game.
Are contractually obligated to make a confident call as part of our Wednesday handiwork. And this was my confident call, just going to go drop a big bomb on the Bengals. Greg drinking his little 12-ounce bottles of Haterade.
Oh,
whoa. No,
typical Sessler. He thinks the world's against him because one person out of five picked the other team that's probably favored in this game.
Look,
give me a break.
I think the Cleveland – I'm not actually thinking because of Manziel. They almost beat the Colts last week. All had Manziel been in there and simply churned out a couple field goals, they would have won. I mean, it was an offense that went in reverse and did nothing. So I like where the defense is at. It's much as about that as the offense. And they're at home.
And I, for some reason, I continue to have this image in my head that the Browns are playing a deeply meaningful Week 17 game with a chance to make the playoffs. And I told you, Mark, and it's not personal against you, I see something crushing happening to the Browns to not win that game. Or perhaps they do win the game and then they get killed by some team winning later in the day. Something really heartbreaking.
Sure.
Or Billy Cundiff probably blows something. Something like that can happen. But still, it will be a building block season for a franchise that needs one. So I think to get to that point in the Sessler I have, they got to win this game. Take care of business at home.
Makes sense.
Bengals have a problem. I think they gave up their most yards in a game since 2007 last week, and their best defensive player, Vontaze Perfect, is out for the season.
That's a problem. They've also had a hard time really integrating Giovanni Bernard into the offense since he came back from injury. Now we hear from Bernard they're going to start Jeremy Hill, use him more as the bell cow guy, Bernard on special plays. I actually think that's a good thing for
smart.
This offense.
I don't think Bernard's a great runner. He's a really good receiving back. Hill's a better runner.
Hill also, when the Browns went in and stomped them, went to the media and called them a joke, basically. And the Browns players said, it's not all about metrics, guys. Sometimes it's
ahead.
A little bit more. No, and the Browns players basically said, we're going to settle this score with Jeremy Hill on Sunday. And you got your coach calling the Browns quarterback a little person. Come on. This is too much talk from a Bengals team that is unimpressive.
They forgot that they were the Cincinnati Bengals.
Right. You don't live in Cincinnati. Or no, you don't even live in Cleveland.
you don't live in either city. We live in L.A.
Moving on, the Pittsburgh Steelers, as we said, had that big win over the Bengals, and now they go to Atlanta. the Georgia Dome, which is just an electric atmosphere for football. I find, get under that roof, get on that turf, Mark, and away we go.
Electric offense.
I think you've said enough.
All right. Setting Mark loves outdoor stadiums, and thanks for playing along with me there, Mark. The Falcons, who, by the way, if we haven't been paying attention, things are wide open for them to win this division. They stink. That's the problem. But you have Carolina, whose quarterback just was in a two-car accident where his car flipped 14 times. You have the Saints, who just absolutely laid an egg at home against that Panthers team before the car wreck for Newton. So you have, you know, all these awful pretending teams that aren't playing well. The Falcons, if they could just find a way to play halfway decent football, could steal this division. Will they win at home against the Steelers? Chris Wessling.
I haven't been able to trust the Steelers from one week to the next all year. I feel really good about them in this game.
Really?
Julio Jones with a hip flexor, and he has been their entire offense the last 2 weeks.
If he can play, you're right.
If Julio Jones can't play, the Falcons don't move the
ball. He's been the Le'Veon Bell of wide receivers the last couple weeks. Just yes, absolute a one-man wrecking crew.
But this offense is better than it was early in the year. I thought this was one
the Falcons?
Of the Falcons.
Only because Julio Jones was playing out of his mind. Look at what happened Monday night.
Maybe.
No one else did anything.
We were trying to give them, you know, the Browns defense played well lately. They moved the ball against the Browns, but then they had 500 yards against Arizona. They had a big-time performance in Green Bay. The offensive line, which has been such a disaster all year, has at least been stable to the point where Matt Ryan kind of looks like Matt Ryan and is playing pretty well. Their offense is probably the best thing going in the NFC South right now.
If Julio Jones is healthy.
All right.
I can't
probably right.
emphasize
I
enough how much he's carrying
I took the
this
Steelers,
team.
So I agree. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they put up 40 points on the
this
Steelers.
This is a tough game.
I agree. I'm shocked we
oh,
all took
only
the Steelers.
Because it's in Atlanta
I
is
think,
it a
yes.
tough game.
I think the Steelers are a much better team than the Falcons. Look, the Steelers
But that
are,
hasn't mattered with the Steelers.
The Steelers
We've seen
are
that
only
so many times.
Two fluke losses from the Jets and Bucks away from having the same record as the Patriots.
But let me ask you this, Chris. When you're Pittsburgh and you have all week to prepare for the Bucks and all week to prepare for the Jets, and you blow both of those games, that tells you something. Those aren't flukes. That's something about your team
right,
that says you're not going to show up in a big moment.
Right. They also had a very close win against Tennessee, an ugly win against Jacksonville. So at a certain point, it's not flukes. That's just kind of who they are.
If they could lose to those teams, the Falcons could beat them. But I think there's a reason we all pick the Steelers because that potential is so great
right.
with this team, and they're playing well. So, yes, I think, Wes, you'll admit it too, we've all kind of got sucked back in by the Steelers because it's so easy to get sucked in by this team. Let's see if they burn us again. Moving on. The Green Bay Packers, who are playing like no one else in football right now, head to Buffalo to face the Bills. You know, the Bills are one of the damned. We forked them earlier in the show, so that tells you where we stand on this game as a group. But, you know, still, this is a team that's played well at home this year. They've showed they have a great, you know, defensive front. Eddie Lacy is dealing with a little bit of an issue with his hip, I believe, which is something you got to keep an eye on. But still, Aaron Rodgers is on one team and Kyle Orton is on the other. So I assume that will settle this in terms of a competition.
I actually thought about picking the Bills in this game because of the way their defense plays at home. They just fly to the ball. And then I thought of what you said. It's Aaron Rodgers against Kyle Orton. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
It's almost like I agree. The Bills at home are tantalizing, but it's in enough to keep this competitive for a certain amount of time. But what we've seen from Green Bay on offense of late is just an outpouring of points and yardage. They looked completely unstoppable. They're at the point where when the Broncos were hitting their peak, where unlike some who want to watch a 50-7 game, and I get that, that's cool. Like, I want to see close games, and the Packers are sometimes off my radar as an exciting watch because they're that dominant. This is the one chance they play a defense that might maybe keep it close for a couple quarters.
It's a really good matchup with the Packers offense versus the Bills defense, and especially the Packers offensive line, which has gotten a lot of love, like as this reformed great unit. Like, we'll see how good they are this week because the way to beat the Bills is not really to drop back and pass 40 times. And that might be what they have to do if Eddie Lacy's not healthy. I mean, the Broncos had the right idea to just run at them because you don't want to get your QB hurt.
I think
Marcel Darius coming after you.
Well, after watching what Julio Jones did to the Packers secondary, the Bills have to feel good about the way Sammy Watkins played last week. He was making big catches all over the field. And I feel like he's gotten a little left behind like Mike Evans and Odell Beckham. Sammy Watkins is going to be an absolute star in the NFL.
Yeah, but their offense is so hard to watch. They were reminding me of Jason Campbell with the Bengals last week at the end of the game, just dink and dunk every play. everything they do is about deception or trying to trick the offense with like five different fake screens and Orton throws it 5 yards. It's like, after a while, it's not an NFL offense.
And real quick, because of the quarterback, I mean, Watkins didn't cross 38 yards in a game for the 4 weeks previous. It's like he's hot and cold because of that offense.
I think it's also because he's been playing through injuries all year.
He looked great this past week. He looked like back to the guy who was dominating earlier in the season.
I know we want to move on, but quickly, I do want to give some love to Fred Jackson, the oldest back in the league. Maybe his last few games here, he's still getting it done. Been kind of fun to watch.
I heard he's playing Bryce Brown.
He's fun to watch, though.
There were some whispers that Fred Jackson could replace Frank Gore in your stable of boys.
Oh, they've both been there for a decade. They're two of the longest-term tenants. I don't have as much turnover as Wes. I'm not fickle. Those guys have been hanging out. Feels like a shot.
What are you talking about?
Steve Smith's been in the stable for like 14 years.
All right.
He's in the Mount Airy Lodge Pocono.
Julio Jones has been in there his entire career.
Steve Smith. He's in one of those champagne glasses. That's also the hot tub.
Oh, that was...
It's your boy.
Bucky Brooks is in there, too.
That shot was unwarranted.
I was just saying, you admit, Fred Jackson, he's been my guy.
He just hurt.
Yeah, it's been a long week, and, you know, this is what Dan and I deal with every day downstairs.
All right, moving on. So while we were talking about some of these AFC North teams that are going to have to slug it out this week to keep their place in the standings and hopefully move up, one team gets a bye there, the Baltimore Ravens. They're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. Everything is pointing, the Ravens playing, you know, very well of late. Everything's pointing to the Jags. Essentially giving the Ravens little trouble, a 33-10 type game. That's just what I'm feeling. Do you guys disagree, or is this game just going to be a blowout?
They're two unevenly matched teams. The Ravens are a really good team. Did you know that the Packers are the only team with fewer 3-and-outs than the Ravens this year?
They're a borderline great offense. It is so strange to watch a Joe Flacco offense be a top 6 or 7 offense, and I think he is playing as well as he's played.
He looks more athletic. Like, his pocket movement's been great.
The only way you beat the Ravens is by throwing a lot on them, and Jaguars can't do that.
And Baltimore, with this quarterback, this coach, they've been here year after year. This is not an unknown place. And that whole division is so shaky with the Steelers, the Browns, the Bengals. We don't know what's going to happen. The Ravens are the one team that, yeah, I'm confident they'll go in and take care of business. By about the score Dan mentioned.
33-10.
Sure. Sounds fine.
We all pick the Ravens.
Book it.
There's one bright side for you, Mark, because of Shoelace's injury. Denard Robinson, a lot of Toby Gerhart.
Oh, boy.
That isn't a bright side. I'm not going to get into it.
Toby Gerhart against the Ravens, I touted him as
lead the AFC in touches. Yeah, right.
Mark was remarkably, and we all make mistakes, but Mark was remarkably high in the Jaguars as a franchise entering the season.
I really thought
Coaching staff, general manager, running back.
I thought they'd go Blake about Bortles. 9-7, 8-8.
You literally picked their GM to make the leap.
I did.
It's great.
You know what? I'm willing to say that I was about 1,000 miles off, not on him specifically, but the whole team.
That makes you.
You are a lover scorned right now. You hate the Jags.
Be exciting.
All right, move on. As we move on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who will travel to Charlotte to face the Panthers and not see Cam Newton, who, of course, after that car accident, will miss this game. Derek Anderson will get his second start of the season. His first start was in Week 1, also against the Bucs. He played pretty well there. And the Bucs are in, you know, suck for duck range right now. They're 2-11 at the bottom of the NFL standing, so... You know, don't be surprised if they stall and finish at 2 or 3 wins. I don't imagine they'll beat the Panthers, but the Panthers kind of stink too. Could be a game.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a 4-win team they're playing, so true. It's not like...
Right, that hadn't won a game in more than 2 months. We all picked the Panthers, and I feel good about that because they just don't want to take the Bucs on the road at all. But this is a team that won 1 game out of 9, and they have Derek Anderson starting, so who knows?
I think we pointed to their two biggest weaknesses being an offensive line and secondary for the Panthers, and both played much better last week. Maybe it was just because the Saints didn't show up, but their offensive line looks pretty good. And on the other side of the ball, the Buccaneers, real quick, they do have two keepers that they got off the waiver wire or off the trash heap in the offseason. Linebacker Danny Lonsana has had a great year, and this guy, Jaquise Smith, pass rusher, defensive end, could be a starter next year. Looks really good.
One thing about the Bucs, 7 games, 8 points or less decided, but they've been in a lot of close games. That's the most in the league with the Jets. I mean, and they're losing them, so they're not a good team, but they're not getting blown out week after week.
The Houston Texans, meanwhile, they are looking to hold on to their place in the AFC playoff race, the fringe of the AFC playoff race, and they have to travel to Indy now to face the Colts led by Andrew Luck, of course. So this promises to be a tough game. But we will say this about the Colts. They did not look very good for 58 minutes against the Browns last week. They kind of got let off the hook by some bad Brian Hoyer play. So is it possible that the Texans hang around to this game and maybe have a chance to steal it? We'll start with Greg.
I don't think so. They've never won in Indianapolis, which I don't put too much stock in, but I do put stock into the fact that the Colts are a different team at home, especially that defense, than they are on the road. They are a problem, though. They are due to be picked off by some inferior team because they're not really a good team at all. The offensive line's not very good anymore. The defense had started out well, and that's not very good. They're just kind of Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. That's your team.
I think their offense, though, is the chance to be when it wants to be special. I mean, what they did last week was no small thing. They completely had the mental strength to wipe out in their minds three quarters of terrible play, and they know that with Luck and Hilton, whoever else, they can come flying back. I mean, this reminds me of last week's game a little bit.
They need to run Fleener and Dwayne Allen in two tight end sets and put Reggie Wayne on the bench. I'm sorry, but I came in Monday morning, and the first thing I said to you guys was, Reggie Wayne's done. He's playing. I didn't know he was playing through a torn triceps, but his game last week against the Browns was the worst game I've ever seen by a wide receiver.
He looked injured.
It was. It was the worst game I've ever seen by a wide receiver.
Wait, what about your Kenny Britt games last year?
It was in that territory.
No,
Reggie Wayne dropped three.
Good callback.
Reggie Wayne dropped three passes, and they were all right in his hands, and he couldn't do anything.
No separation. You got to get Moncrief in there. Heron's all right. I mean, it's a good offense. If the Texans somehow won this game, by the way, we forked them weeks and weeks ago, they got a chance to win the AFC South. Now, I don't think they're going to win this game, but we are in week 15, and if they just won this one game, they're one back with two to play.
Right, right.
And they, you know, they got a shot.
Here are our fork danger teams, because when we fork a team, that means they have no chance in our minds of making the playoffs. And if we get one wrong, Greg donates to a charity, which he'll be the first one to let you know about it. So yeah, the Texans are one of those teams that we forked. The Panthers we forked, feeling okay about that, and also the Falcons. So you know, everyone else I'm feeling pretty good about.
It's only because a division this year is historically god-awful that we're even dealing with two of those teams.
I mean, we talked about forking the Saints, too. Just forking the whole NFC South out of total disrespect for the entity.
I like that.
They deserve it.
Yeah. Moving on, the Oakland Raiders buried more balls and head to Kansas City to face the Chiefs. Speaking of a team that's on the fringe and on the chopping block and could have a fork sticking out of their back by next week, they are on a three-game losing streak now. 7-6, so they desperately need this win. They will be at home against the Raiders. Everything seems to be in order for the Chiefs' get-healthy game for Kansas City, no?
Should be, but the Raiders have a chance to have one of the all-time runs of spoiling team season. I mean, they can spoil Harbaugh in that era, take out and sweep the Chiefs and basically end that rival season. It'd be fun if you're a Raiders fan. You got nothing else to play for.
Chiefs' run defense stinks. In the last 4 weeks, Marshawn Lynch, Latavius Murray, C.J. Anderson, and Kerwin freaking Williams put in four of the best running back games you'll ever see.
I have a Sessler that Latavius Murray is going to drop $150 on the Chiefs.
Would not surprise me.
To make this a game.
You should switch over and take the Raiders.
Sessler. I said make it a game. Not win the game.
I wasn't that impressed with Murray against the 49ers. I mean, it's a different defense last week, but he ran for like 1.9 yards per carry. He is by far the best weapon they have out of the backfield. Weapon not maybe being the right word, but at least they've moved on from their two 45-year-old running backs.
MJD didn't even get a touch last week. I mean, not totally
surprising.
I think we all knew even before the season started that might not work out. But to see he won the rushing title 3 years ago, and now he's going to be out of league probably.
Have they started measuring his yards per carry in feet yet?
This is an insane stat. So the Football Outsiders has the worst run offenses, you know, measured by their advanced stats since 1989. The Raiders have the sixth worst running attack since 1989, MJD involved. The fifth worst of all time, last year's Jaguars, MJD leading the show.
Oh,
there too.
Good point.
So basically, he has led two of the worst running offenses in NFL history.
Did you get that from the Week 15 research notes, which I hold in my left hand right now?
I did not. I mean, this is straight. No, they don't go to Football Outsiders. This is their own little proprietary
TD,
stuff.
Thank you.
Dan is holding it above his arm.
Hoisting it above the world. Yeah. No, it's a good stat, though.
Thanks, buddy.
No, so the Chiefs, though, I mean, Wes and I last week picked them as maybe sneaking in the back door for a playoff spot.
I'm already regretting it.
Yeah, I don't feel too good about that either. I think we might be forking them this time next week.
Moving. Wow.
Well, you know.
How quickly happen. They fall.
Yeah, you know, these things happen. Moving on, the Miami Dolphins. You know, Greg's going to put this as like one of the games of the century because he's been talking about this Dolphins-Patriots showdown for weeks and weeks. So now they get a chance. The Dolphins head to New England to face the Patriots. And, you know, earlier in the show, let's be honest, we forked the Dolphins. So you know where we stand on, as a group of this with this game. But are the Dolphins going to show some life? The porpoises, I should say.
They won this game last year. In week 15 against the good Patriots team. I'm just telling you what happened.
You're not going to hear the word revenge out of New England this week, but that's exactly what's going to happen in this game.
They're not going to get swept by the Dolphins. That's the difference this time around. And I just don't understand how this defense in Miami has collapsed, and I think that more than anything is why this whole team might get taken apart in the offseason.
Yeah, it's a total weakness right now that they can't. Miami's defense was the reason in week one they went in there and did a nice job against New England. It's mystifying to me, but they completely crumbled on that front. New England is running the ball well. They're going to put four running backs in there that we've never even heard of, signed off some sort of street committee tomorrow, and they'll each run for 50 yards.
You make a good point. By the way, I think we talked about this a little bit over the weekend. All right, Bill, we get it. You're a master of the world, and you're smarter than all of us. Can you put Jonas Gray in the game? Put him in the game. He ran for 200 yards and 7 touchdowns on Sunday Night Football. He oversleeps once, and we never see him again?
That's what a genius does? You can spend 6 weeks telling Mike Tomlin, I know how to outcoach you and your players with the Garrett Blood
so
running through people.
It is
annoying. I usually defend Belichick for just about anything. But get the boy in.
His name is Jonas.
I mean, he looked great that one game.
Just give him another chance. Give him 10 touches.
He'll
just
be
see
back.
What happens.
He'll unleash him in the divisional round for 197 yards and 3 touchdowns.
It wasn't the going out that got Belichick. It was the Sports Illustrated cover. He was just like, that ain't happening again, Jonas. That's too much attention.
He does not have editorial control, Greg. Well, he's poor. He's
looks like he
control,
does.
Apparently. Yeah. So anything else to say about this game? It feels like the Patriots are just typical late December regular season destruction fest, right? 40-21.
Be shocked they don't take care of business.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Ooh, this is a game that has everybody excited. East to West, the Washington Redskins head to the Meadowlands to face the New York Giants. We'll probably see Colt McCoy in this game. Jay Gruden came out in his Thursday press conference and stated that barring a setback with a Friday precautionary test with some doctors, McCoy will play with that neck issue he's had. So we'll get another look at McCoy. I guess at this point, Wes, you're shaking your head.
Nothing has tickled me as much this week as Jay Gruden holding off on his quarterback decision to see if Colt McCoy is healthy. Give me a break. Kirk Cousins is better than Colt McCoy. Play him. I think it's hilarious that they're waiting on Colt McCoy's health to make a decision.
Last week, really.
It is Colt McCoy.
I know. It's hilarious.
It couldn't have gone worse for Gruden because if he has another game where McCoy doesn't score a point or has a terrible – I mean, he's kind of – Gruden's digging his own grave by just sticking with McCoy.
It's
the sign of a person who's not thinking clearly.
Well, what is he going to do? You're so excited about Kirk Cousins. I don't know if that's any better, though.
They've averaged 400 yards of offense in Kirk Cousins' starts, 300 in RG3s, and about 330 in Colt McCoy's. Kirk Cousins is better.
He said, what was that, Mark?
I don't know. I mean, I don't see a whole – at this point, if you're Gruden, maybe a little bit of consistency from week to week in practice with the same quarterback, this ship is sinking. I mean, I'm not sure going to Kirk Cousins – I see what you're saying.
Why would you not play a healthy Kirk Cousins over an injured Colt McCoy? I don't understand that.
How many interceptions did he throw?
I mean, he moves the offense.
He crushed them with turnovers.
Well, you're
how
biased.
Did Colt McCoy
you're
play last
you
week?
Your
I'm
son
not,
is named Colton.
I'll be the
it's
first
been nice
to tell
to
you.
See Colt McCoy back on the field
Colt
for
McCoy
the whole family.
Colt McCoy is who we thought he was. He was signed to be a third stringer.
This is Mark's son we're talking about. Oh, no, it's called Sessler.
No, I think Colt McCoy is an average, but we're not arguing between Colt McCoy and this outrageously higher supreme being. We're talking about very average quarterback.
We have to wait for our injured quarterback who couldn't move the ball past the 50-yard line last week, and it was signed as a third stringer. That's who we're waiting on.
Well, they're almost out of the league.
They all stink. I mean, come on.
And maybe it's the offense, too. The reason why Mark is so salty, though, is by tradition, he always has the last Colt McCoy game that he played on a loop in Colt Sessler's room playing at all times.
That's true, actually.
Just all day, every day. And so right now they've got that Rams shutout stinker. Everyone's in a bad mood because of it.
I have a two-year-old. That would drive my two-year-old insane. I don't want to deal with the ramifications.
By the way, it's telling. I don't know if you guys saw Jay Gruden admitted earlier this week, too, that the job has been harder than he expected. I don't think he should have known that it was going to be a circus in Washington, but because every year it's something new. This year, of course, it's that RG3 fell off the earth. Last year, it was all the Shanahan stuff. But I don't know. This is starting to feel a little one-and-done-y, doesn't it, with Jay Gruden?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
Jim
Zorn.
How is
fantastic?
How is Bruce Allen going to keep his job? Two different head coaches that he has handpicked have benched the quarterback who he went out and sold his soul for.
Here's the thing: I don't think Bruce Allen is handpicking anyone. I don't think he's handpicking players. I don't think he's handpicking coaches. I think the owner's picking the coaches.
He definitely brought in Jay Gruden. Those two are buddies from way back.
By the way, Odell Beckham walked across the Hudson River this morning.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Moving on, the New York Jets are heading to Nashville to face the Titans in a game. Really, it's really about the draft more than anything else. Who will move up and closer to that number one pick, and who will bury themselves? So, again, as a Jets fan, it's a tough spot, but I will be kind of rooting for the Titans.
Kind of rooting? That's just wrong.
Tanusi? Where are we? I don't even know what's happening. But Zach Mettenberg is not playing in this game, so Wes, you're excited because you get to see a little Geno Smith, Jake Locker action.
Here's what I like.
Fire that up on Game Rewind, big boy.
Here's what I like about this game. You know how the Bengals' Saturday playoff loss has become my favorite holiday?
Yes.
One of my favorite holidays is also when the patron saint of bad teams, Chris Durham, joins a team during a lost season. And you just look up one day and you're, hey, Chris Durham plays for the Titans now. There he is.
It's a weird gig, but it pays well.
I'm amazed. Actually, I'm not amazed at all. This should be a split performance. Mark and Dan took the Titans here, so I'm going to be rooting on the old Jets to try to pick up game on you guys.
Which always means the Jets lose whenever you have to root for the Jets.
Just rooting for Dan to get that number one pick, and I hope you guys can take it from there.
Well, but now I'm a little nervous. I was all excited about Marcus Mariota, and then Bucky rolls in here and tells us that
Mariota
will be bagging groceries in 3 years.
Maybe you'll be getting James Wilson.
For Kurt Warner.
The Titans, by the way, are the worst team in the NFL. That's why I didn't take them. I think they are the very worst team in the NFL if I had to choose one. It's Tennessee.
Here's my another great stat from one of your former stable members, Bishop Sankey. Trent Richardson has more runs over 15 yards this year than Bishop Sankey. That is disgusting.
Troubling. Speaking of disgusting or more distressing, the Jets announced that, or the Daily News reported, I guess the Jets probably announced it, that Jesse Jane Decker, Eric Decker's wife, will be singing the national anthem, performing at halftime at Meadowlands Stadium when they play against the Patriots. You don't need to be an expert in anything to know that's a bad idea, and she's going to get booed, and it's going to be a plot line that the tabloids will be writing.
That would
have
been nice in around September 18th.
Yeah, after she says that the Jets fans are mean, and she got into that Twitter war.
Oh my God!
You don't then march her out to midfield for a halftime show. Am I the only one that's using my brain?
No, you are. It's a poor idea.
And they probably did this to get back in his favor after all of this, after, you know, saddling him with Geno Smith.
No one thinking, clearly. Moving on, we head to Ford Field where the Minnesota Vikings will face the Lions. The Lions are 9-4, and, you know, they took care of business against the Bucks last week. So that snapped a 9-game losing streak in December. If they can win this game, and let's face it, it's a very winnable game against the middling Vikings team, they would be in very good position to grab a playoff spot at 10-4. So the only thing that could really hurt them is if they pull a Lions, if they get Lionsy and blow this game. And frankly, I would not be surprised if it happened. I didn't have the guts to pick the Vikings, but I could see that happening.
I don't think the Vikings are a particularly good team. week to week. I think that they are misleading 6 and 7. I think Teddy Bridgewater has kind of maxed out what he does, and the defensive line is pretty good, but it's not as healthy anymore. I mean, the Lions should take care of business. I think they will.
I mean, they finally have their Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate combination healthy and together, and this is one that if they are a playoff team on any level, you got to go in and take care of business with authority. Vikings a little strange, though. It's not a complete cinch of a matchup.
No, they beat them 17-3 in Minnesota. Their next two games aren't tough, but you could see them losing one of them. This game against Minnesota, and then they go to Chicago next week.
The last 2 weeks in my game rewind notes, I have the same sentence written. This team is better than people think about the Lions. Stafford has a 125 passer rating the last 2 weeks. Eric Ebron's finally getting involved. Golden Tate is Hines Ward. DeAndre Levy's an all-pro. This defense is for real.
Do you trust them?
The offense is getting better.
Do you trust them? Right, so obviously you have them taking care of business against the Vikings, but in the playoffs, if they're better than people think they're, you know, a 10-win team, are they much better than that?
I think they're the third-best team in the NFC.
Wow.
Quite a drop-off, really? From 2 to 3.
Yes.
Yeah. But you think they're better than the Eagles?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. I guess it's not that crazy.
By the way, and Dominican Sue Set told reporters yesterday that his agent will decide where he plays next, most likely.
Thank you.
And what's that?
I like that.
Yeah, you like it. He's candid. That's good. But my favorite part was when reporter just trying to draw something out of this stone asked Sue, what memories are your favorite takeaways from your time at Ford Field? His quote, wins, Thanksgiving. Other than that, I don't know.
Feeling good about the Motor City, huh?
There hasn't been a whole lot
wins
to cherish.
Thanksgiving? What kind of answer is that?
He's not a dumb guy either.
And Thanksgiving were two of the lowlights of his career happened back-to-back Thanksgivings. He loves playing the villain.
Get excited for your playoff run, Detroit.
Exactly. Finally, Monday Night Football, the New Orleans Saints head to Soldier Field to face the Bears. The Bears got beat up against the Cowboys in their last meeting on Thursday Night Football. So we get gifted with another Bears primetime game, this one without Brandon Marshall, who got all types of messed up when he took that shot to his back on Thursday. So he's out. And the Saints now in, you know, which will be a really telling game for them, a winnable game, but also a team that's in a little bit of turmoil, as we see the Sean Payton benching prominent players, and, you know, they cut somebody. And so now they have a big game here. They have to reestablish themselves, and they're not a great road team. What happens? This is a tough game to pick.
Well, we all picked the Saints, which I think is
a surprise.
Well, it was just last week that we were saying, all right, you know, we finally figured it out. We're not going to keep falling for this inconsistent, disastrous New Orleans team.
Good point.
So let's put them on the road.
Are we supposed to fall for the inconsistent, disastrous Chicago team?
It doesn't matter who New Orleans has played. They've been a nightmare. I mean, they're going to go on the road in a frigid environment. I guess the saving grace is that the Bears, they're allowing scores on like 50% of the drive. It's like 47%. It's like the highest of any team in like 20-something years. So maybe New Orleans can get it going.
The Bears had reached that rare place for me a couple weeks ago that I thought, I'm not going to pick them to win a game the rest of the year. Like, I can't imagine. Like, if they were hosting the Jaguars, I would take the Jaguars.
I can't kill you on that.
Jay Cutler was symbolized for me in one play last week that he wasn't involved in. It was Andrew Luck throws an interception, and I think it might have been Joe Hayden. He goes and he's so eager to make the tackle, he actually flies through another player to make the tackle, and I'm just thinking, can you picture Jay Cutler doing that? No way. No, he doesn't care enough.
All right, so that's it. That is the previews for all our games that we'll see coming up. We're looking forward to another week as we get closer to the playoffs. This is we'll be back on Sunday. And we'll recap all this goodness. Thank you, as always, for listening. We meant to get to some of those iTunes comments. We didn't do it this week. We'll get to it next week, though. But thank you to everyone that's been leaving comments and doing all that great stuff to support the show. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the Mailman, the Boss, and TD behind the glass. Until Sunday.